Dive into the start of summer at Whole Foods Market. Check out their summer splash event with sales on fresh organic produce, organic strawberries, and a fan favorite sale on Ben & Jerry's and Talenti. Explore deals on grill-friendly meats like organic air-chilled chicken breast, beef and chicken kebabs, all with no antibiotics ever from our meat department. Plus, grab easy sides from prepared foods and cool off with refreshing drinks. Kick off your summer and shop in store or online at Whole Foods Market today.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
With the Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card, you can earn unlimited 2% cash rewards on purchases you want and purchases you need. That means you earn on what you want, like trying out that new workout class, and 2% cash rewards on what you need, like a foam roller for your sore muscles. That's the beauty of the Active Cash Credit Card. It's ready when you are, with unlimited 2% cash rewards. The Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card. That's real life ready. Terms apply. Learn more at wellsfargo.com/activecash.
Sophie's Choice for 2024. You win the Oscar, not only for Best Director, but Best Actor, and Carey Mulligan wins Best Actress. Or the Eagles have a Super Bowl victory. What
Eagles
do you
Super
choose?
Bowl victory.
Eagles. What?
Wow.
What?
Eagles.
I know. Lying
I'm
now,
sick.
Aren't you?
E-A-G-L-E-S, Eagles!
Well, we know one thing right out of the gates on a Thursday edition of PFT Live. Bradley Cooper is full of shit. There's no way he's trading ultimate professional personal accomplishment for Eagles winning the Super Bowl. There's no way. But he's got to say Eagles winning the Super Bowl. He's got to say that because it's all part of the whole routine. Be in the luxury suite, camera on me. And I'm not saying it's specific to him. It's just the world in which he resides. There is no way. And I think he's a great actor. Great actor. Silver Linings Playbook. Awesome. Awesome. Stars Born. Awesome. Place Beyond the Pines. Underrated movie from about 12, 13 years ago. Awesome.
Hangover.
That other
awesome.
Thing he was in. Awesome. Hangover. Awesome. But his yep. best acting may have been the lie he told through his teeth to Howard Stern. There is no F-K-I-N-apostrophe way that guy takes Super Bowl win by the Eagles over Oscars up the wazoo for whatever movie. Oh, it's the Maestro. Maestro.
Yeah, when he's the
There's
composer,
no way.
Right? Right?
There's no way.
Right.
Yeah,
I
no
mean,
way.
I doubt. I don't know.
No
didn't it come? I thought I saw it came out yesterday that like he was joking. Like we knew that.
Okay.
All right. Well, Johnny Sirius here on a Thursday morning. You can't play with the clip a little. Jeez.
I didn't know he was joking. I
don't know. I don't know. And maybe I'm wrong. Maybe
our
I'm
producers
wrong.
Producers choose.
Yes. I don't know.
But in the show is real.
I thought I saw a headline like that yesterday. But whatever. Like, of course, he'd like the personal accomplishments, like you've talked about. He hasn't won an Oscar yet, right? That's what I was trying to remember too, because that would, you know, maybe dictate things a little bit. I do think he is psycho enough of an Eagles fan that it actually is like a thought for a second, right? It's like a close second. Like, okay, we know he wants to win the Oscar, but the Super Bowl for the Eagles, it's not far behind. He is diehard. Like, he ain't that good of an actor, let me tell you, right? Because I just know when we were on the field for the Patriots-Eagles Super Bowl there, he was on the field pregame, and I could see the passion. He was so excited, and he was talking to every Eagles fan. And, of course, every time there's a game that he's at, he's there in the owner's box. And, you know, to go that psycho the way he does when good things happen, it's real, that's for sure. It's real fandom. I'll give him that.
Well, and as I've said in the past, the Eagles winning one Super Bowl made their fan base even more passionate, even more insane,
even more
desperate. It like made them crack addicts collectively. They got to have more. They got to have more. One wasn't enough. You know, for a lot of fan bases out there, one you would think would be enough.
Yeah.
But once you get one, see, that's the thing.
Yeah, you get addicted to it.
And that's, you know, let me tell you, I've said this probably in this setting before. I know I've told others. If back in the 70s, when I got lured into a love of the National Football League, obviously, you're not Rob Lowe wearing the hat with the NFL shield on it. You're not just a fan of the league with no allegiance whatsoever. That's what draws you in. There's a team you really like that you want to see do well, and then you develop a hatred for all the other teams. If you're doing it right, and this is where fantasy football has screwed everything up, frankly, if you're doing it right, you love one team and you hate all the other teams.
That's right.
That's the way to really do it right.
Yeah.
So if the team that lured me into this when it was time for me to pick a team, and, you know, I remember there was a time where I was considering the Chiefs. God, I wish it had gone that way now. There was a time when I was considering the Raiders back when I was 4 or 5 years old. I'm not so sure I'm happy it didn't go that way, but they did win 3 Super Bowls, even though it's been a long dry spell. But I settled on the Vikings, and if they had won 1 Super Bowl during the 70s and extinguished this flame that burned and continues to simmer. Thank God it's either a product of age or being in this business. It's not like it once was. I probably wouldn't be sitting here right now. I probably wouldn't be doing this right now, because that desire, that Bradley Cooper-esque zeal, kept me focused, motivated, driven every day. What's going on with the Vikings? What's going on with the NFL? And it continued until November 1 of 2001, and actually a year or so before that, when I first kind of tripped into the business in another setting. But
if they won a championship, you're not sure you'd be doing this.
I might be out.
I don't know. I don't believe that. I actually think it might be like the other thing you said, like the Eagles and the Patriots. Like, you win a Super Bowl, you see those fans, they just got thirsty and hungrier for it, right? And to us Giants fans, they became quite asshole-ish out there, okay? That's how I look at those guys. I mean that to be funny, seriously. But, yeah, I don't know. You might have turned it up a notch. No.
Let's look at it this way.
Right.
When you win a Super Bowl, when your team wins a Super Bowl, like, usually that team is viewed as a favorite to at least contend to get back to the next one.
Yeah, sure.
Even though we have seen teams fall off the face of the earth, in the afterglow of a team winning the Super Bowl, no one says, oh, they're going to suck next year.
Yeah, no.
So right. I guess it would at least keep you engaged for the possibility of 2 in a row,
yes,
since that hasn't happened
right
in 20 years. So I don't know, though. And at this point, look, I got so much of my life invested in this. I don't know. I'm sorry. People were getting excited out there thinking, hey, maybe if the Vikings win a Super Bowl, we'll get rid of this.
Yeah. So,
no, sorry. So, I'm not leaving.
So where do you think you are? Like 60% or like the heart pie for Floria. It's like 60% pro football talk, 20% Vikings, 10% Steelers. Is that about the right breakdown there, you think?
You're a dick. Oh, by the way, we're one word at a time. We're expanding the vocabulary of Mikey Casey. We've already heard from Matt that right out of the gates, Mike Florio said a bad word. So kids got to learn sometime.
Yeah, that's right. Good impressions for these young kids out there.
No, I've ridden this thing for so long. I decided a long time ago, I'm staying on this horse until it dies under me or throws me off, or I drop dead on it. One of the three. So it doesn't matter at this point. I'm going to keep doing what I do the way I've always done it. People will say to me, you've changed. Oh, maybe you've changed, because this is the same I've always been. This is the guy I've always been. This is the, you know, once we get in with NBC and we become mainstream, and I've learned a lot over the years how to do the job the right way, and I'm going to keep doing it. No reason not to.
No.
So
I hear that.
So sorry, everyone out there that would
he's
be
not
inclined
leaving.
To think.
Well, you, if the Vikings get to the Super Bowl,
me to go away.
If the Vikings get to the Super Bowl, can you get in the owner's box and be like the Vikings' Bradley Cooper? Can you do that? Can you be the Chiefs' Taylor Swift? Can you do that? They'd be like, damn. And we'll if it's an NBC Super Bowl, we'll show you and be like, damn, they got Florio up there. Man, they're big time. Look at these fans they got. Superstars.
I think that they would not want me to be around because I would use that as an opportunity to tell the Wolves everything they need to do to make
them. Okay.
So
there you go. You're going to oligarch the oligarchs, huh? You're going to tell them how to do everything?
I don't think they want that. Yeah. I'm not going to cower. David Tepper better be damn glad I'm not a Panthers fan and never was one. Yeah, I would make sure that my opinions were made known even during that. You know what? Here's the other side of it, too. And I went through this, well, really back in 2017, the year of the Minneapolis Miracle, and the Super Bowl was going to be in Minnesota. That was the year the Eagles beat the Patriots.
Right.
Drove Bradley Cooper and the rest of their fan base even nuttier. When the Vikings do well, and when they get within sniffing distance of a Super Bowl, that's when this lock opens inside of me where all this nostalgia pours out and memories of growing up and memories of being around my parents. And this is going to make me start crying when I think about it. But when they start getting close to that pinnacle, I get all messed up. And now I got it coming in both directions because my kid is as nuts as I was at that age. So I don't know that I'd survive that 2 weeks, and I definitely wouldn't survive the 4 hours of the game if it ever happened, because as it got closer and closer, it would be this flood coming in both different directions. Because I joke to my son all the time, well, you know, when the Vikings finally win the Super Bowl, you're going to be dancing around my tombstone after you watched it on your phone propped on top of the thing. And at times I say, maybe it's going to be your kid in the same cemetery, you know, split the difference between the two plots. But anyway, I don't even want to think. I don't know. I'm so convinced they're never getting back in my lifetime that I don't know what that 2 weeks would be like. And especially, I don't know where I'd be or what I'd be doing during that 3 or 4 hours that the game's actually happening, because I can't even comprehend it. So Bradley Cooper's been there, done that, enjoyed the victory. I don't know what I would.
I wish it happened just for that. I'd love to do the week of the show, the week of the Super Bowl with you and torture you. And I mean, where would you be? Like, if the Vikings are in the Super Bowl, I'm going to be sitting right next to you with whatever team they're playing's jersey on to torture you the whole time.
No, you're not.
That's what I'm going to
do. No, you're not.
Hey, NBC, make sure I'm sitting next to Florio. I'm going to get the other team's jersey, and I'm going to torture the shit out of them for the whole day.
If you do that, I'll rupture your spleen.
Okay.
Guaranteed.
All right. Deal.
All right. let's get to it. And this is a quote that Pete added to the document that we share that guides us through the show, the Don Draper line from Mad Men. What is happiness? It's the moment before you need more happiness. And that's what Bradley
that's
Cooper
right.
and the Eagles fans have experienced since 2018, February, when they beat the Patriots somehow. That still is a stunner. I remember going into the stadium because it was an NBC Super Bowl. It was your first one with us, and they've got the banners and the decorations and the pictures, and you've got a big mural of Tom Brady, and then you've got Nick Foles, and it's like, what's wrong with this picture?
Yeah,
like,
right.
Good Lord, the poor Eagles.
Right.
How did they get stuck with this?
Yep.
And that just made it even more amazing.
It was amazing.
The Eagles were able to find a way to beat the Patriots. And Frank Reich was the offensive coordinator, not Frank Reich, David Tepper. Frank Reich was the coordinator of the Eagles in that game, and that propelled the start of his coaching career. And then he ends up in this crazy scenario, as we said yesterday, where Andrew Luck retires just as it looks like the Colts are ready to contend for a Super Bowl, and he gets thrown into this tizzy that ultimately resulted in him being fired on Monday, the second time during two football seasons. And by the way, before we move on to what we're supposed to be talking about, I don't know if you saw this yesterday, but I wrote something about the whole Frank Reich mispronunciation.
Yeah.
And he did it twice. It wasn't just once.
Right.
He did it twice. So he's either got a mental block that causes him to inadvertently mispronounce it, or he's doing it on purpose. And I wrote the story about it. And it's so funny because, and I raised this question on Tuesday night as we were getting ready to do Wednesday show. Like, is it too petty to point out this guy being petty enough to mispronounce the name of the coach he just fired? And we decided, no, I mean, this is ridiculous. No one calls him Reich. It's ridiculous that he would say his name wrong twice in the press conference the day after he fired him. And somebody with intimate knowledge of the dynamics of the organization reached out to me and said, you're exactly right. This is how he puts people in their place. So that is the rest of the story. It wasn't a boating accident. It wasn't inadvertent. He doesn't have some sort of mental thing that causes him to say Reich, not Reich, whenever he sees the letters R-E-I-C-H. He did it on purpose to put Frank Reich in his place.
Yeah, we thought it was, one of two things, nervousness or a power play. And, the more you think about it, a guy that smart, that intelligent, it's hard to think that, he didn't know how to say the name of the guy that he's probably paying more than anybody in his life right now and is the head coach of his little toy, the Carolina Panthers. So, yeah, not a good look for David Tepper. Definitely a low blow. Maybe he'll address it at some point. He probably should, honestly, because it's
probably not.
He's getting dragged little bit for it. That's for sure.
And look, I don't know this to be accurate. I'm just passing along the information that was shared with me by one of my other writers, because we were discussing this on our text chain where we keep in touch all day long. Yesterday, apparently at some point, Tepper said that if he gets bad service at a restaurant, he'll just buy the restaurant so he can fire the person who provided the bad service. And I said, if he wants to buy PFT, I'll quote him a price, baby. if he wants to buy the operation and fire me, let's go. Let's go. I'm ready to give you a number, David, if you're sufficiently upset with me that you want to get rid of me. And then I made sure he doesn't have enough money to buy Comcast. I don't think he can buy Comcast and fire me from the NBC side of it. So he'd have to buy PFT, which would be considerably cheaper, but I would be ready to name him a price. And this was, and then he can call me whatever he wants to call me, Pete. He could call me if he would say yes to my price and I clock out for good, he could call me whatever he wants to call me. And this was a response to one of our tweets yesterday, Ron Swanson. The Ron Swanson School of Management. When people get too chummy with me, I like to call them by the wrong name to let them know I don't really care about them. All right. Oh, boy, what a – we're 15 minutes in, and we haven't talked about anything yet. We were supposed
to. Got a good one tonight.
Bradley Cooper.
Got a good one. You can't get on Amazon or anything or start your Dr. Doom, speech on the game tonight. You got a good one, so give it some –
We do?
Yeah.
We do?
Yeah.
The Cowboys are favored by 9.5 points.
Okay. So what? We got a desperate Seahawks team. It's got a lot of stars across the board. It's desperate time for Seattle. So that's what I do like. Desperation usually means good football and maybe some results that we don't expect. So I think that's where it's good. That's where I like the matchup.
Ooh, you're going to pick the Seahawks to win? Is that what you're saying?
I'm not sure about that. I'm not sure about that. But there's some
things
I like.
You're just saying it. It adds... It adds drama.
Yes.
It adds intrigue. Although, hey, 3 days ago we saw a team 6-5 that was trying to avoid falling to 6-6, and they sure didn't play with the kind of urgency that you're implying the Seahawks are going to display tonight.
No, well, yeah, I you're right. They did not. But we'll see. This is this is not a journeyman quarterback that they got. There's a little culture there in Seattle. They playoff football team last year. They don't have any significant injuries like your Vikings team does. So there's a little difference there. They're a little banged up, sure. But, yeah, these are big moments for Seattle. I mean, Seattle's underwhelming, really, right? Since the start of the season, it's just like, how good is the Seattle Seahawks? I think that's where you start. We know Dallas is legit, right? I think you and I both agree. I mean, Dallas, definitely third best team in the NFC, definitely a top five team in football or right around that. So we'll discuss them in a minute. But Seattle is the team that's like the conundrum right now of football. You know, whatever side you want to talk about here, but you talk about the talent they have in their football team. We've hit on it, right? The skill guys, you know, they got good tight end play. They got two good running backs. It's a shame they got two good running backs, and they got an O-line that's just not very good. It doesn't run block good. It doesn't pass protect good. Geno hasn't been as good as he was last year. You know, the defense, you flip it over there, they got an all-star secondary to a degree. Right? But they're still letting up yards. They got a pretty good front seven, that go, well, they shouldn't be getting gashed the way they get gashed right now. So that's where it's hard to find Seattle. And it's just like, Mike, I go, how good is Seattle? I don't know. You know, I think they fooled us a little bit with that early season Detroit win in Detroit where the Lions turned the ball over.
And the Giants Monday night game.
And yeah, you're right. And I think those two moments kind of made us think, okay, maybe they're a little bit better than they are. But, you know, since then, they haven't beat a team that we would look at as one of the upper-tier teams in football. They've been kind of feasting on the poor, as I like to say. And I think that's the big question tonight is, can they turn this around here in the next 5 or 6 weeks to look like a legit playoff team that could actually maybe beat somebody in a wild card round?
Is that a Greenwich saying, feasting on the poor? I have a feeling that's a Greenwich.
It's really not. I think I've always kind of said it. It's not a Greenwich saying. I don't know. Yeah.
Well, you've always been rich. You've always been rich.
Always been
silver
spoon-ish.
I figure that's something rich people would say, feasting on the poor. All right. So, you know, I do a radio thing every Wednesday on KJR in Seattle, and they're just resigned to the fact that the gap between the Seahawks and the 49ers is actually growing because they're dismayed that they were beaten so badly last Thursday night on NBC and Peacock by the 49ers. And I said, look, when the 49ers are fully healthy, they're going to do what they did to the Seahawks to pretty much everybody. It's not a reflection on the Seahawks that the 49ers are the best team in football when they're healthy. So, yeah, you're assigned to that division. You're kind of stuck with this life cycle of talent and coaching and everything they have going for them for as long as it lasts. But
yeah.
It's kind of hard to close the gap with a team that is that good. And if that's how you're judging yourself, if that's your measuring stick, you are going to be depressed. Because,
yeah.
Look, when the 49ers had their three-game losing streak, when they weren't healthy,
right,
the Seahawks took over first place in the division. And I think, look, I remember kind of thinking wistfully when we thought the Seahawks were better than they were. Hey, they're really going to separate. They're going to have a chance to show that maybe they're the best team in the conference in this 49ers-Cowboys, 49ers-Eagles four-pack of games. And now I look at it and say they're probably going to lose all four of them.
Yeah, I hear you there. I think it's scary or, you know, it's definitely a flip of the coin right now to know what you're going to get or expect from the Seattle Seahawks. You know, I think what you say about the 49ers and what they're dealing with, right? They've had to deal with some good teams in their division. The Rams won the Super Bowl, you know, just 2 years ago, of course. And we know the 49ers have been in the mix for, you know, the last 4 years. And I think the weird thing to me with the Seattle, and especially after the fact that, you know, we saw them almost have a mini dynasty early on in the 2010s and get to two Super Bowls in a row there, where it was all predicated on, you know, a dominant offensive line overpowering you and a dominant defensive line, a lot like the 49ers. And that's where the Seahawks can't match up with the NFL elite right now. That's the problem, right? I mean, you know, on offense, they can't run the ball. All right, so then they're resigned to throwing the ball too much. They're not throwing the ball that great. Their offense isn't that creative that the pass game can just carry it by itself. You know, the O-line's not great at pass protecting. They do have Abraham Lucas, I think, coming back at right tackle, so that's going to be a big deal for them. That helps. But, you know, then on top of that, you talk about those problems. All right, they're bad on third down. They're one of the worst in football. They're bad in the red zone, right? That filters over to their defensive side of the ball. You're bad on third down. That usually means you're bad at time of possession, which they're bad at as well. Now their defense is on the field. So it hasn't been like a cohesive team feeds off team type of formula this year from Seattle. It's like a collection of plays on both sides of the ball. It's hey, they drive the ball to the third through the 30s. They kick a field goal. They can't score. And then all of a sudden they might hit a deep touchdown from 40 yards out. But it's kind of just all over the place that way. You never feel like they can sustain drives and be consistent and score points, you know, drive after drive. And that's kind of been the problem that's plagued them all year on the offensive side of the ball, at least.
You mentioned Lucas. He is back, but there are plenty of injuries for the Seattle Seahawks. Kenneth Walker II, who has the potential to be one of the great running backs in the game,
no doubt,
can't stay healthy.
Right.
He's got an oblique injury. He is doubtful. There's the rest of the notable injuries for tonight, and they're all Seahawk logos except for Peyton Hendershot. Cowboys tight end is questionable with an ankle. The good news, though, for the Seahawks, remember there was that triceps injury suffered by Geno Smith the Sunday before the Thanksgiving night game when they got swept by the Rams. There was a question whether or not he was going to be able to play. He was questionable, and he played. Pete Carroll has addressed Geno's health this week versus last week. Here is what Pete Carroll had to say.
Oh, it was different night and day. Night and day. I mean, he's out there running practice and putting on a show for us as he does every week and throwing the football over the place, and he did that exactly. He was full go the whole time, and that was not the case. And so, you know, we want to make a big deal about it, but, you know, it's pretty obvious. You know, there's a big difference.
You know, and it's funny because, yeah, we knew in the run-up to the game that he was injured. There were no shenanigans with the injury report, as possibly happened one Thursday earlier. But after the game, everybody was like, oh, he was fine, he was fine, he was fine. It wasn't an issue. Well, of course it was an issue. Of course it was an issue. And I get it that you don't want to use injuries as an excuse. You don't want to get into that habit. There are no excuses. We just didn't execute. We didn't get it done. But they seem to be optimistic, Chris, that we're going to see a better version of Geno Smith this week. And, hey, we mentioned this from time to time, even though the reporting that happened at the time the deal was done told us all it was 3 years, 100 plus million. It's 1 year, 28.
Yeah.
And they can tear it up and walk away, just right, like the Raiders did with Derek Carr after 1 year of his contract. Tear it up and walk away and move on to another option at quarterback, whoever that might be. And I don't know that there's a playoff mandate, officially or unofficially, or what it's going to take for the Seahawks to maybe go in a different direction. And a lot of it depends upon what they think their options are. But, Chris, right now,
yeah,
he's up against it.
Definitely.
To prove that he belongs there next year as the starter. And tonight's game, I think, is going to be a big data point when they get to the end of the season and figure out what the right thing for the organization might be.
Yeah, I think this whole stretch is a big data point for him, right? I mean, to see where – and it hasn't been as good as last year. He hasn't thrown the ball as well as last year. He hasn't taken care of the ball as well as last year. Those are all problems, right? So we know Pete Carroll doesn't like that, a defensive head coach. I think you this stretch here is going to be a little bit of a telltale sign of, wait, do we have the type of quarterback that can help us beat, you know, the NFC elite, right? That's what we're seeing. Now, he gets the benefit of the doubt last week because we know the 49ers are awesome. And, yeah, Geno wasn't 100%, right? But, yeah, this is, I think, a part of the test or whatever you want to call it of the Seattle Seahawks evaluating him to figure out whether he is the guy for next year. As it stands right now, yeah, it's thin ice, I think, for Geno Smith and that and being back for next year and collecting another $28 million check, right? But we'll see how it goes tonight. Tonight, maybe they can get it started. Right, they, like we talked about, they haven't beaten very many quality teams. The Lions are really the most quality win they got on the schedule. Dallas, we know, talent, you know, their defense comes after you. That worries me for Geno Smith and that Seattle Seahawks offensive line. We just talked about it. It's not that good. You saw the guard, Phil Haynes, he's out. That's a little bit of an issue. Their interior part of their O-line is not good to begin with. Now they got that to deal with. And you got Dallas with all those crazy mofos. And the craziest mofo of all, number 11, going to be all over him all night, Micah Parsons. Well, I will give them a little bit of a shining light or a fighter's chance, a boxer's chance, whatever, is that Dallas is so super aggressive on defense at times, as we know, it could lend itself to, hey, we know they got some freaks on the outside in Seattle with DK Metcalf and Lockett and Jaxon Smith and Jigba, to where if they roll the dice too much trying to pressure Geno and really smother them that way, they could leave themselves in some compromised positions for, you know, covering Seattle. And you add that to Seattle's desperation, where I think they got to be looking, hey, we got to figure out how to make some big plays and maybe let it loose a little bit. I think that's where the game could be dangerous for Dallas on a Thursday night.
You know, as you were discussing Geno Smith and the issue with turnovers, and we know how Pete Carroll feels about that, and we know what kind of offense he wants to run, I just allowed myself to ponder some of the names that might be available if they don't go the young quarterback route. And, you know, Kirk Cousins is going to be free and clear. And I allowed myself to ponder for a second or two what that might look like if he were to go to Seattle, where he'd be in the same division as the 49ers and face them twice a year. And we saw what he did to the 49ers on that Monday night several weeks ago. And I'm sure Pete Carroll saw it too. And this is one of the realities of having the kind of flexibility the Seahawks have. All bets are off after the season. They can go whatever direction they want, and we know Cousins is going to be available. Some of these other veteran quarterbacks, we don't know. We don't know what the Bears are going to do with Justin Fields. We don't know what the Cardinals might do with Kyler Murray. Not that they would trade him to the Seahawks, but and I'm not sure that he would fit with what Pete Carroll wants to do, but Cousins is out there free and clear and able to plug right in with those freaky receivers, with that defense that is better than many, if not any, that Kirk Cousins has had. It's just something to keep an eye on. Now, the Cowboys had questions coming into the season about their franchise quarterback. They've got a huge cap number next year, nearly $60 million for Dak Prescott. And I think you and I both agreed, along with many others, it was time for Dak Prescott. If he wants to parlay that into another high-end contract, he needs to play like a high-end quarterback. This year, he is. Here's Jerry Jones from one of his many appearances on 105.3 The Fan in Dallas, answering the question of whether this is the best he has seen Dak Prescott play.
Really, I can definitively say this is the best I've seen him play. I think that I would give Mike McCarthy a lot of credit here, because what they've done is really installed. Mike has done a great job of coaching coaching how important it is that they get the fundamentals down of what we're trying to do offensively, what we're trying to do. Believe in it. Keep working on it. It'll come. And so they've stayed consistent with the changes and what he's trying to do offensively. That's paying off.
I won't let my active psoriatic arthritis joint symptoms define me.
Emerge as you. Tremfya guselkumab is proven to significantly reduce joint pain, stiffness, and swelling in adults with active psoriatic arthritis. Some patients even reported less fatigue as assessed by survey 1 week prior. Results may vary. Tremfya is taken by injection 6 times a year after 2 starter doses at week 0 and 4.
Serious allergic reactions may occur. Tremfya may increase your risk of infections and lower your ability to fight them. Before treatment, your doctor should check you for infections and tuberculosis. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms of infection, including fever, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough. Tell your doctor if you had a vaccine or plan to.
Emerge as you. Learn more about Tremfya, including important safety information, at Tremfya.com or call 1-877-578-3527. See our ad in Food & Wine magazine. For patients prescribed Tremfya, cost support may be available.
Life is a highway. And on it, there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy. So go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
Save big money on protecting your garden. Now at Menards. Messina's Animal Stomper is a liquid repellent that prevents pesky animals from damaging your garden. Available in a convenient, ready-to-use bottle. It lasts for up to 30 days, regardless of weather and watering. Save big money on Messina's Animal Stomper at Menards. And check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
Now, there's a general rule of thumb out there that I'm sure Jerry Jones is well accustomed to. When you're facing a negotiation with a player, don't be over the top in your praise of the player, because
he seems
those
to break
words
that
get
a lot.
Printed out and laminated and handed to you at the bargaining table when it's time to meet with the player's agent. But they are already screwed. Look, it's obviously something that makes him happy because he wants his team to do well and he wants to win a Super Bowl, yada, yada, still searching for the hole of glory. But it also makes it easier for him to do what he's going to have to do anyway. He's stuck with Dak Prescott's contract. And so when you're stuck with that contract and you're going to have to turn it into some massive top of the market deal in order to shrink the $59.4 million cap hit, if he's playing well, that makes it a hell of a lot easier to do what you have to do anyway. So that's where I think Jerry Jones' greatest happiness, i.e. the moment before he needs more happiness, that is where I think he's most happy about what Dak's doing, because they are over the barrel. And when they write the next giant check and commit to the next big contract, it's going to be easier to justify, because we're not giving it to a middle of the pack guy. We're giving it to a guy who's in the MVP conversation.
Yeah, no, I think that's right. And you know, he's last year was the only year of his career that I really look at to go, that was a middle of the pack performance by Dak Prescott. He's always been a top 10 quarterback, really, for the most part, you know, almost since the instant he got into the NFL. Rookie year, okay, they managed him, they ran the ball, Ezekiel Elliott was phenomenal, but you know, there's a lot to like about Dak Prescott. There is. You know, is he a superstar? Can he take over the game in a backyard element like we know some of the great ones in the sport can right now? I'm not sure to that capacity. That's not the way he plays. But at the same time, you know, as far as standing in the pocket, making the right read, you know, standing in the pocket, making the pockets collapse and making aggressive big throws down the field and being accurate with it time after time after time. One of the best downfield throwers in the sport, really, ever since he's got into the NFL. That's where I like Dak Prescott. And then he makes a few moves outside the pocket every now and then. And you can call some quarterback design runs with him because he's a big sucker. That's for sure. I think Jerry Jones they're elated. They're happy as hell, Dak Prescott, for all the reasons you talked about with how he's playing, right? They know they're stuck in a tough spot, and especially if he plays like this, yeah, I mean, there's nothing they can do. He's coming back. I think what they're hoping is maybe if we kiss his ass enough and he plays well enough, he won't hold us over the barrel too much, and he'll start to go, hey, I made a lot of money. Let's see if we can get a few more players in here to win some Super Bowls so we can get some glory hole going in here, because, you know, we know Jerry likes some glory hole, right? So that's where he I think they're kind of hoping right now, and that's the trajectory that's going on. But, you know, how could you not like Dak Prescott? His ability to handle the, oh, if they play bad, he's trash because he's the Dallas Cowboys quarterback. If they play good, he gets propped up to such a level sometimes it's not realistic either. And he handles it, you know, with unbelievable maturity, grace, professionalism. You say it, Dak Prescott does it. You know, he is the guy you want to lead your offense and be in front of the podium. He has so many positives about him. I have great respect for Dak Prescott, and he is playing some awesome football right now.
And by the way, for those of you who might be new to the NFL, new to this program, and are alarmed by the use of the term glory hole by Chris Sims, it is a reference
you brought it up
to
first.
A comment that Jerry Jones made. I tried to be tactful about it. Jerry Jones made it in a press conference prior to the 2012 season where he said, and I'm kind of quoting, not 100% accurately, but he said, I've been here when it was glory hole days, and I've been here when it wasn't. Now, having said that, I want me some glory hole.
That's news to me.
His spokesman at the time, Rich Dalrymple, said glory hole is a term commonly used in the oil and gas exploration industry where Jerry has made most of his money. And Jerry said that's news to me. And I say all of that just so that I can justify offering up this twist on the Don Draper line from earlier in the program. Glory hole is the moment before you want more glory hole. That would be the Jerry Jones. That would be the Jerry Jones happiness angle. All right. So anyway, we continue to discuss the game tonight. Hey, the Cowboys. As well as they've played this year, 13 straight wins at home.
Right.
And they dismantle people. They blow people out. They embarrass people. They got Dust Up Del Rio fired last week.
Right.
But even though that was probably overdue, but they're still the 5 seed. They can't catch the Eagles. And I think that the Cowboys, Chris, you talked about the desperation the Seahawks are going to be feeling tonight.
Yeah.
The Cowboys are going to be feeling pedal to the metal because they play tonight, and then they get to sit back and watch the Eagles potentially lose to the 49ers, narrowing the gap to the point where the Cowboys could catch them next Sunday night on NBC and Peacock, Philadelphia at Dallas.
Yeah.
That lines up perfectly. Cowboy win tonight. Eagles lost Sunday. Next Thursday night, must-see TV on NBC when the Eagles visit the Cowboys. And look, I don't need to say that to hype the game up. I don't need to say that to get my paycheck. It's the truth.
Yeah, it is. It is the truth. They're a highly motivated football team. I don't think there's any question about that. They haven't hid that. I mean, they want to be the kings of the NFC. They realize that the 49ers and Eagles got their number, right? They got a lot of things on their football team that are awesome. The one thing they haven't been able to match up with is the size of those two teams. That's really been the problem with them. Their defensive line versus the size of that Eagles O-line and 49ers O-line has been a problem. Shouldn't be a problem tonight. And Dallas, like you said, I mean, leading the league, right, in overall net points, right? They're third in overall net touchdowns, you know. So they're up there with the elite in a lot of categories, offensively and defensively. You know, they're an awesome football team. It's just how awesome is the question. A little bit like we talked about Seattle, right? You know, Dallas really doesn't have a marquee, whoa, they beat that team in type of win the whole year. They don't have one of them, right? So that's the other thing, too. We know Dallas is good. I'm not doubting that. But it's just how good. That's what I'm not quite sure about. You know, it was an underwhelming performance, we know, against the San Francisco 49ers earlier in the year. The Eagles game, hey, they did a lot of things and maybe outplayed the Eagles in a lot of ways. But as we know, it's you might outplay the Eagles, but you're not going to outscore them and win the game. They're phenomenal that way. And in the big moments, just like we saw last week, the Eagles won the big moments against the Dallas Cowboys. So I think it's fair, too, to see where they're at as far as what we're talking about. And you're right. I think there is a little bit of desperation from Dallas because of the pressure the owner has on them, the leadership they have on their team with Micah Parsons and Dak Prescott. They openly talk about how they want to be the best and be in the Super Bowl and get there. And you know, tonight is the first step into them kind of showing us all what they got and seeing if they can't start tip the scales their way in as far as the Eagles matchup coming in 2 weeks.
None of the teams the Cowboys have beaten this year currently have a winning record. And when you look at that schedule, the Cowboys ultimately may rue the day that they lost to the Cardinals back in week three, 28-16. One of only two wins on the season by Arizona. And the only loss that doesn't fit this profile. They should have beaten the Cardinals. They didn't. They have lost to the 49ers handily. And then, as you said, they outplayed but did not outscore the Philadelphia Eagles. If the Cowboys don't have the number one seed, they can only blame themselves for as great as they've been. And that's the thing. You can be a team that has the potential to be dominant, but you can't slip up. Because if you slip up, you don't get to bring your opponents in the postseason to the place where you are the most capable of being dominant.
Definitely.
And for them, home field advantage means everything. And they may have to hit the road. They may have to start in Atlanta or New Orleans and do it the hard way and only get a home game if the sixth seed or the seventh seed start pulling some upsets.
Right.
And they'd be hosting the championship game if they even get there. And we know they haven't been there since 1995. So that's what's got to be just so frustrating. You build an elite team, but man, your margin for error is still so thin to set the table to have a favorable scenario to get yourself to where you're trying to go.
Yeah, it's you know, they're in a juggernaut as far as they got two teams in front of them in the NFC that are damn special. And we know the AFC's got a lot of good teams, but I'm not sure any team in the AFC is well orchestrated as the 49ers and the Eagles. So, yeah, they got to deal with that. They do. And to your point too, with how important this is, and you've already alluded this to a degree, and we know this, and you know, you brought up Jason Garrett saying it before. The biggest thing about them is the surface they play on. And that's where it stinks if you're one of the lower seeds behind Philadelphia or the 49ers. Because then that game goes to the grass field. The grass field slows down Dallas. The grass field favors the bigger team usually. That's the 49ers and the Eagles. And that's why Dallas has issues with them. And that's why, to your point, the home field advantage is so important, because once you get inside on that carpet, their speed goes to another degree. It's like kind of like back in the old days where, you know, you wanted to play the Indianapolis Colts and Peyton Manning and Dwight Freeney and all those fast dudes, Bob Sanders, and you want to play them on grass, because if you went to the RCA Dome and you had to play on the artificial turf or the field turf, like, get the hell out of here. They were so fast. It was like, is there 20 of them out here? Holy crap, there's like 20 Tasmanian Devils. And that's kind of the way Dallas is, you know, and that's where, you know, this home stretch here and some of these teams they got to play here down the stretch, we're going to get a real good feel for how exactly good Dallas is and can they overcome, you know, things like we talk about, playing on a grass field, weather, stuff like that.
It's an amazing dichotomy. The players, anyone you talk to, and recently Javon Holland, the Dolphins safety, told me in detail, and I asked him, explain the difference, how your body feels the day after playing on grass versus the day after playing on turf. And it was very good. The story's at PFT, if you want to see it. The video's out there as well. But teams, some teams.
Yeah, are better on
Cowboys,
that surface.
With an owner who refuses to put grass in his stadium unless that's what it takes to host the World Cup final. That's the, like, hey, it's good for certain teams, even though the individual players would just as soon be able to get out of bed the next morning without a bunch of aches and pains from their joints just throbbing from all the force going straight back up into their body, because there's no give on that thing that allows them collectively to be faster. It's another reason why the owners who have turf, who have a team built for turf, they're never going to switch voluntarily. It's cheaper, and it allows me to build a team that has an advantage when I'm playing at home, and the Cowboys definitely do, and we'll see it tonight. Seahawks, Cowboys. I agree with you. This is one that stood out all year.
That's right.
It stinks that the Seahawks have tailed off, but still, like you said, they're desperate. There's an extra element to it. It's post-Thanksgiving, and we're getting toward the point of the schedule where you take whatever you can get. Because before too long, we're all going to be seeing, where's our Thursday night football?
Yeah.
So enjoy whatever there is that Amazon and the NFL are offering.
Yeah, that's right. Hey, the Seahawks got to hang on here. They lost both times to the Rams. The Rams are only a half game back. You know, they're out of the playoffs. They lose tonight, and the Rams win this weekend. You know, Green Bay is breathing down their neck now. They've come back to the pack. This is a big football game. You know, and Mike, to your point too, with the grass and the turf thing, because I know we got to go to a break here at some moment, right? But like, I know that's going to be an excuse a little bit, like what you're talking about, the surface. My team is, you know, conducive to the field, the AstroTurf and the artificial stuff, all that way, right? Where that's kind of a cop out, right? I played on the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. They were that type of team. They won a Super Bowl, fast defense, smaller team, right? You know, you're in a place like Dallas, they can make that grass like it's an artificial surface, like it's a golf course where it'll play so fast. So, you know, I don't want to hear some of this bull crap excuses from these owners when the time comes with that type of subject there. You know, they can make it plenty. Hey, the Dolphins, look at what they're doing. Are they kind of fast team? They're kind of fast, right? I mean, only the fastest team we've seen in the last 20 years, right? They're
and it does look like they're playing on a green.
Exactly.
It looks like they're playing on a golf.
Exactly.
Green.
So places like Dallas, Miami, Tampa, whatever, you know, as long as you're not having a concert 7 days a week there, you can make that grass as fast as hell, every bit as fast as the artificial stuff.
And just to prove that line item where you've got the tray that slides out so you can keep the grass pristine while you have all of your concerts, your boxing matches, WrestleMania, whatever else it is that you want to put in that stadium to make your money. We're not saying that you shouldn't be able to make money using the stadium, but what we're saying is you should have spent the money necessary to have the best possible surface for your players in whom you've made a major investment. And I'm still waiting for one current player to say, I prefer playing on artificial surfaces than playing on grass.
Nobody.
I have yet to find one current player that will say it, and I keep looking. All you got to do, and anybody that feels that way, they got Twitter accounts. Boom, boom, boom. I do prefer playing on turf to grass. No one said it, and I don't think anyone ever will. All right, let's take a break. The Eagles, we discussed them. They've got the 49ers this weekend, and their signature play, the brotherly shove, the tush push.
Yeah.
Whatever other name they might come up with. It's causing a little controversy, and we're going to discuss a little more controversy. We're going to discuss that next on PFT Live.